the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank this year rises to 15, as a report shows Israel killed 20 children in Gaza last year. Ukrainian presidential advisor tenders resignation one day after he said a Russian missile that killed dozens in Dnipro was shot down by Kiev. And U.S. police arrest an unsuccessful Republican state house candidate for orchestrating shootings at the homes of four elected Democratic officials in New Mexico.
More welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
The Israeli violence has claimed the life of yet another Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian media, Hamdi Aboudia was killed after he shot at an Israeli post in the city of Al-Khalil. His death brings to 15 the number of Palestinians killed by the regime since the beginning of the year. Israel has intensified its crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied territories over the past several months. Regime forces have killed around 150 Palestinians in the region last year. That is the highest death toll since the year 2004. We reached out to our correspondent in Ramallah for more details on the latest Israeli killing of a young Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank.
This time, 40-year-old Hamdi Aboudia, and he's a Palestinian police officer. He arrived at the military checkpoint of Halhoul, and then Israeli forces opened fire at him and killed him. After that, the Israeli military said that Aboudia had a gun, and he opened fire at the Israeli soldiers there, but none of the Israeli soldiers had been wounded. This is according to the Israeli military statement that Aboudia tried to carry out an anti-Israeli operation by shooting at Israeli forces, and then they killed him at the spot. As you have mentioned, 15 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli forces, including minors, since the beginning of 2023. Even if Aboudia tried to carry out an operation or a shooting at the Israeli forces or not, Israeli soldiers are quick to pull the trigger and to shoot and kill Palestinians, because at the end of the day, many of those who were killed by the Israeli forces since the beginning of 2023 were during Israeli military raids to West Bank areas, cities, refugee camps and towns, and many were only peacefully protesting the illegal policies and practices by the Israeli forces. But at the end of the day, the Israeli soldiers know very well that even if they use their guns and kill Palestinians, they would not be tried, and that they would not be dragged to Israeli military courts.
Israel keeps targeting Palestinians across the besieged Gaza Strip. A new report by a human rights group shows Israeli forces to have killed 20 children in Gaza in 2022 alone. In our news review program, we discuss the regime's atrocities with our guests. Let's take a listen.
A rights group says Israel has killed 20 children in attacks on the Gaza Strip in 2022. The Gaza-based Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights says three of the kids lost their lives as regime forces prevented them from seeking medical care in hospitals. According to Al-Mizan, the Israeli raids also injured at least 170 children. Many of the dead and injured were shot during anti-regime protests along the separation barrier borders of the Gaza Strip. The group says 23 children were also arrested in the territory last year. Israel blocked Gaza Strip in 2007, turning the enclave into an open-air prison. The regime has also launched four major wars against the coastal territory, killing and injuring thousands of Palestinians. To discuss that further, we're joined by Wafa Al-Udaini, Palestinian activist and journalist from Gaza City. Thank you very much, ma'am, for joining us. Also, we have with us Gina Rabai, human rights activist from Beirut. I'm not sure if I pronounced your name correctly, ma'am. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's begin with our guest from Gaza City. If you could please shed more light on the different dimensions of this report by Al-Mizan.
Yeah, actually, Al-Mizan documented war crimes committed by the occupation forces against Palestinian children. And indeed, the occupation forces used the lethal force against Palestinians everywhere, regardless their age, their position, their status. And yeah, actually, just last year, four Palestinians died because Israel denied them from exiting Gaza to get the treatment outside Gaza. Three of the four who died last year are children. So Israel actually use all ways possible in order to target Palestinian, in particular Palestinian children. And indeed, several reports, several investigation reports were documented Israeli war crimes against Palestinian children. But indeed, nothing happened on the ground. Nobody stopped Israel from committing more war crimes here in Gaza or in the West Bank or even in occupied Jerusalem.
Exactly. Let's bring in our guest from Beirut, who is a human rights activist. What is your take on this? We're hearing these different reports about how children, most importantly, other than, of course, grown-ups who are being targeted by Israeli forces, we're hearing a lot about children being targeted by Israeli forces and reports like the one we received from Al-Mizan.
Okay, thank you for having me. First of all, let us analyze what keeps Israel going on at the same pace with its brutality against Palestinian children mainly and Palestinian people in general for more than seven decades now, apart from the Palestinian rightful resistance. But what keeps Israel targeting children of even less than 10 years old? It's because Israelis have acknowledged through long-term experience that they will never be held accountable. The international community, which basically submits to the will of the most notorious Israeli supporter, that is the U.S., and which accepts the membership of an occupation entity among its members, will never regard Palestinian rights and will never demand Israeli accountability. The suffering of Palestinian children in terms of killings, arrests, physical and psychological torture in prisons, the trauma of losing loved ones, the loss of safe shelter and the denial of medical treatment, and the imposition of a living with the constant possibility of being killed at any moment since birth reflects the fact that the world does not care about the rights of the vulnerable and that what is taken by force and arbitrariness could not be restored by international conventions on human rights, nor by an intentionally deaf international community.
Thank you very much for your elaborations, Gina Rabai, a human rights activist joining us live from Beirut, and Wafa Al-Udaini, Palestinian activist and journalist from Gaza City. Thanks to both of you ladies for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has staged a naval drill in the Persian Gulf. IRGC's Navy Commander Rear Admiral Ali Reza Tangsiri says a broad range of weapons and equipment were tested during the maneuver. They included various cruise missiles systems, drones carrying exact precision rockets, as well as unmanned underwater vehicles. The general says IRGC commandos also carried out heliborne operations during the drill. General Tangsiri says the country's air defense and the Army's air force also joined the IRGC forces in the drill. He says foreign forces present in the region are well aware of Iran's preparation to respond to any threats or acts of military adventurism. Seoul has downplayed anti-Iran comments by South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol during his recent visit to the United Arab Emirates. South Korea's foreign ministry described the controversy over Yoon's remarks as unnecessary over-interpretation, said the comments are irrelevant to ties with Iran and reiterated commitments to developing friendly relations with Tehran. The ministry added that Yoon was trying to encourage South Korean soldiers in the Persian Gulf when he called Iran an enemy and the biggest threat to the UAE. Yoon had also likened the relations between the UAE and Iran to those of the Koreas. The remarks have drawn an angry reaction from Tehran. It has called the comments meddlesome, and diplomatically illegitimate, demanding an explanation from Seoul. Ukrainian presidential advisor has resigned after saying that the country's military downed a Russian missile that fell on an apartment building in Dnipro, killing dozens. In a Facebook message, Oleksiy Arestovych publicly apologized before withdrawing the comment on the incident. His remarks put a question mark on Kiev's description of the Dnipro incident, which left 44 people dead as a Russian missile attack. The Ukrainian Air Force had denied shooting down the missile, arguing that it did not have the equipment to intercept ballistic weapons. Moscow earlier had denied targeting residential areas, saying that Ukraine's air defense systems caused the damage in Dnipro. Ukraine's president called the incident a war crime and used it to urge his Western backers to accelerate arms supplies to Kiev. A correspondent, Donetsk Johnny Miller, says Russia and Ukraine have both focused on war rather than seeking a peaceful resolution as Western countries continue sending weapons to Kiev.
One of the interesting things about this Arestovych story is that it's very important for Ukraine and NATO propaganda to continue to convince people in Europe that the only way to end this war is to continue to send weapons to Ukraine instead of pursuing peace talks. So it's very important for opportunities in which civilians have been killed to try and convince European people, increasingly European people anyway, with rising energy bills, desiring a peace agreement to be had and an end to this war. But right now, NATO and NATO countries seem determined to say to European people the only way to end this war is to continue to send weapons. And that's what we're seeing now, especially as Russia has seemingly lost faith in Ukraine and NATO to pursue peace. So Russia as well, very much just focused on trying to win the war.
Turkey is demanding that Sweden and Finland hand over up to 130, quote, terrorists before Ankara approves their bids to join NATO. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says that he has warned the two countries that their accession bids would not be approved by the Turks if the terrorists are not deported. Turkey had earlier warned Sweden, in particular, that it must first take a clear stance against what Ankara sees as terrorist British militants and a group that Turkey blames for a 2016 coup attempt. The two Nordic countries applied for NATO membership last year. The request must be upheld by all 30 NATO member states. Turkey and Hungary are the two remaining members of the military alliance that have not endorsed their applications as of yet. The top metropolitan police officer in the British capital says hundreds of law enforcement personnel are likely to be sacked over sexual and domestic abuse offences.
I've put 30% more officers into that. We've done public and internal appeal, more than 250 more investigations. We're systematically reviewing every member of police staff and police officer who we have any historic flags against for being involved in any incident involving domestic abuse or sexual violence. I'm sure some of those will turn out to be nothing of concern, but many of them will turn out sadly to be of concern. And I've been candid. I've got tens of thousands of fantastic men and women, but I've got hundreds who shouldn't be here. I'm going to sort it out.
Well, he says the sacking will be part of a clean-up in order to regain public trust. London's Metropolitan Police has been rocked by a series of scandals in recent years, plunged into a further crisis after a police officer named David Carrick pleaded guilty to 24 counts of rape in the span of two decades. In 2021, another officer was jailed for raping and murdering a woman that he abducted as she walked home. Now more than 1,000 officers and staff are under review over sex offense claims. Public confidence in the Met has been shattered by revelations of his culture of corruption, racism, and misogyny. Staying with the UK, it's bracing for another travel chaos as train drivers have decided to go on a strike next month over pay. The drivers' union, SLEF, said its members would take strike actions on February the 1st and 3rd, that after it rejected a pay rise offer of 8% for 2 years by the Rail Delivery Group. Other public sector workers, including teachers and Border Force staff, have also announced new strikes next month over similar disputes. Meanwhile, new data shows the purchasing power of Britons has further eroded as the country's rampant inflation outpaces earnings. Figures from the Office for National Statistics show a 2.6% drop in real wages in November of last year. The fall indicates that wages do not match the double-digit inflation, which is a major source of discontent among workers, leading to frequent walkouts in recent months. The EU faces economic uncertainty in 2023 due to gas supply issues. The European Commission has acknowledged that energy sanctions against Russia are backfiring to some extent. Jerome Hughes has more from Brussels.
On Monday, Eurozone finance ministers marked the occasion of Croatia becoming the 20th member of the Eurogroup. However, Zagreb joins the Euro at a very precarious time for the currency. The big question is, where will the EU get its gas in 2023 and at what price?
While high storage levels and lower demand have helped to bring energy prices down, the crisis is certainly not over.
The EU insists its move to cut out Russian energy over the war in Ukraine has damaged Moscow. But for the first time, there's an acknowledgement of collateral damage.
If you are cutting trade, if you are cutting imports, exports, the bilateral relations with the partner with whom you had a lot of to do with before, then of course there is some negative impact on our side.
Experts say the EU has always been overly dependent on imports of gas, oil and raw materials. It's a reality that won't change.
They all have to be imported in a way that other regions don't. And that means that the European Union is very vulnerable, and it also has to look very carefully where it makes geostrategic alliances.
To obtain essential supplies, the EU will turn a blind eye to crimes committed by the likes of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, according to analysts. Despite enormous economic uncertainty at home, the EU is promising more financial aid for Ukraine.
We will continue to provide strong military, financial, diplomatic and political support to Ukraine and to the Ukrainian people. Together, the EU and its member states have contributed nearly 50 billion euros.
The European Commission has already organised 18 billion euro for Ukraine in 2023. The first tranche is currently being released. The EU will send a further 3 billion euro to Ukraine on Tuesday. As social inequality grows across the bloc, more and more people are asking, can we really afford to keep doing this? Jerome Hughes at the Eurogroup meeting, Brussels.
On to the US. A Republican who was defeated in the New Mexico State Senate elections is arrested for orchestrating shootings at the homes of four elected Democratic officials. Local police say that Solomon Pena paid four men to target the homes of two county commissioners and two state legislators. The incidents took place in December 2022 and early January of this year. Police say that Pena was also personally involved in the shootings. The Republican lost in the race for the local Senate to an incumbent Democrat in November. Pena did not admit his defeat and posted a controversial photo of himself on social media. The photo showed him wearing clothes with slogans reminiscent of how former President Donald Trump denied his loss in the 2020 presidential vote.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, if you remember, we talked about Imam Khomeini's view on women and their status and role in family and society. In this episode, we are going to dwell upon the participation of some members of Imam Khomeini's family in the battlefronts during the 8-year imposed war in 1980s. Stay tuned, please. Sayyid Hassan Khomeini, grandson of Imam Khomeini and son of late Haj Ahmad Agha, was one of the members of the Imam's family who rushed to the fronts to take part in the nationwide struggle against the invading Saddam army. In 1987, he was studying at high school. At first, some of the family members didn't agree with Sayyid Hassan's going to the fronts. The reason for their disagreement was that, in case of Sayyid Hassan's captivity by the Iraqi military, it would demoralize the combatants. Fatemeh Tabatabai, wife of Ahmad Agha, says on the issue, "When our son was 13, Ahmad told him to go to the fronts. I told him that he was too young, but Ahmad told Hassan, 'Look, dear Hassan, perhaps you think why I myself don't go to the fronts. My body and spirit is in the fronts, but I think that presently taking care of the Imam is a greater obligation for me than going to the fronts.'" Imam Khomeini's daughter-in-law continues, "Ahmad started to talk about the benefits of going to the fronts. He said, 'Now I tell you something, but all these things will finish tomorrow. This divine mercy will not be there forever so that you can benefit from it. Now it is the best opportunity to go to the war fronts and use this situation. I say these things so that later on you may not tell me, 'Daddy, I was not mature, but why didn't you tell me?' All the better if you are martyred, but that will be good even if you are injured. However, you should try not to be captivated because it will cause many problems." The words of father affected the son, and the latter left for the fronts as a teenager. He was in the battlefront for a few months. Hujjat al-Islam Masih Borujerdi was another grandson of Imam Khomeini who participated in the war fronts in 1980s. He was sent to Khatam al-Anbiya base, but no one had noticed his relation with Imam Khomeini due to his family name. In fact, he was the son of one of Imam's daughters. Masih Borujerdi preferred to be unknown. Dr. Rajai from the Imam's office was in the fronts in those days and was aware of the issue. He relates, "At that time, no one from the combatants and commanders of war noticed that this Basiji student who performs the congregational prayers quietly and anonymously was the Imam's grandson, Masih Borujerdi. When this young grandson of Imam Khomeini was about to leave for the France, some of the relatives went to the Imam's wife to dissuade him. Ms. Khadija Saghafi told them, "You pray for all combatants, including our Masih. Pray for him to be a useful person in the France and return with health." Thus, Masih left for the France and came back after a while with health. Majid Qaravi was Ms. Saghafi's nephew who was martyred during Karbala 5 operation in Chalamche front. Majid had finished high school in 1983 and started studying in urbanization field at Mashhad University. He went to the battle fronts in 1986. At first, he was injured during the operation for liberation of Mehran city. After relative healing in Tehran, he left for the France again and attained the Elixir of Martyrdom in the epic Karbala 5 operation. He was very effective in persuading his friends and classmates to go to the France. He had told his friends at the university, "Our studying is for God's satisfaction, and now God is more satisfied if we go to the France." In his last will, Majid had asked his mother to intercede for him on the Day of Judgment. When the Imam's wife read his last will, she told her sister, Majid's mother, with tears in her eyes, "It is he who should intercede for you and us." No doubt, these pure and humble youths safeguarded Iran and the Islamic Revolution against enemies and turned Iran into a great power in the region and the world. We plead God for exaltation of their degrees in paradise and helping us follow their path. Amen.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, Ya Ilahi wa Sayyidi wa Mawlaya wa Malik Arqi, Ya Man Biyadihi Nasiyati, Ya Ali Man Bidhurri wa Maskanati, Ya Khabiran Bifakri wa Faqati.
Dear listeners, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab. My Lord, My Lord, My Lord. Ya Ilahi wa Sayyidi wa Mawlai. My Master, My Protector, My Allah. Wa Malika Riqqi, O the owner of my bondage. Ya Man Biyadihi Nasiyati, O he in whose hand is my forelock. Ya Aliman Bidhurri wa Maskanati, O he who knows my affliction and my misery, ya khabiran bifaqri wa faqati. O who is aware of my poverty and my indigence. We have sufficiently discussed the importance of mentioning the name, the chief name of the Almighty Allah is His exalted name, the word Rabb, in the beginning of our supplications. The verses of the Holy Quran, also the traditions were replete with emphasizing the importance of mentioning this in our great requests. We mentioned the different verses of the Holy Quran as well as some of the traditions. Now, one of the important things that needs to be discussed regarding the acceptance of our deeds is the fact that the Holy Quran and traditions imply that there are some other conditions for acceptance of our deeds, and they are belief and sincerity. We said that our traditions are mentioning some important conditions. For example, الشَّرَفُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ سُبْحَانَهُ بِحُسْنِ الْأَعْمَالِ لَا بِحُسْنِ الْأَقْوَالِ. The servant's worth and value before the Almighty is because of his good deeds, not his good speech. Or elsewhere we see, الْعَمَلُ شِعَارُ الْمُؤْمِنِ. Deeds are the slogans of a believing servant. Or elsewhere, one of the infallible says, الْمُدَاوَمَةَ الْمُدَاوَمَةَ. Continue your deeds. Continue your deeds. فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ لَمْ يَجْعَلْ لِعَمَلِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ غَايَةً إِلَّا الْمَوْتِ. Because Allah has not set an end for the believing servant's deeds except his death.
And who is aware of my suffering and poverty? Oh, he who knows my destitution and starvation.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we could never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, dear listeners, we were mentioning some of the conditions mentioned in our traditions for the acceptance of deeds. For example, one tradition reads, أَعْلَى الْأَعْمَالِ إِخْلَاصُ الْإِيمَانِ وَصِدْقُ الْوَرَعِ وَالْإِيقَانِ. The best deeds are belief, piety, and faith. This shows that this is really important, to have faith if you want your deeds to be accepted, if you want the Almighty Allah to forgive you. On the other hand, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has stated, دَعَ اللَّهُ النَّاسَ فِي الدُّنْيَا بِآبَائِهِمْ لِيَتَعَارَفُوا وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ بِأَعْمَالِهِمْ لِيُجَازَوْا. Allah named people after their fathers in this world in order that they would know each other. And he will call the people by their deeds in hereafter, لِيُجَازَوْا, in order that he would give them reward or punishment based on the deeds they have taken with them. In this regard, about the importance of belief as an accompanying condition for the deeds, The Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam states, أَفْضَلُ الْأَعْمَالِ إِيمَانُ بِاللَّهِ. The best deeds is believing in Allah. And the Prophet continues, وَتَسْتِيقٌ بِهِ وَجِهَادٌ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. And fighting in Allah's path. وَحَجٌ مَبْرُورٌ. And Hajj pilgrimage. وَأَهْوَنُ عَلَيْكَ مِنْ ذَلِكَ إِطْعَامُ الطَّعَامِ. And other simpler deeds are feeding the poor, lenient speech, وَالْمُسَامَحَ وَحُسْنُ الْخُلُقِ. Good temperedness. These are easier for you, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says. And even he goes on, وَأَهْوَنُ عَلَيْكَ مِنْ ذَلِكَ. You want still easier deeds to be done? Still an easier deed for you is that you do not accuse Allah in what He has destined for you. أَهْوَنُ عَلَيْكَ مِنْ ذَلِكَ لَا تَتَّهِمِ اللَّهِ فِي شَيْءٍ قَضَاهُ اللَّهُ عَلَيْكَ. Do not accuse Allah in what He has destined for you. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In California, at least 19 people have died as the storms continue to batter the region, leading to widespread flooding, mudslides, and power outages. The National Weather Service says large portions of Central California have received over half of their annual normal precipitation in just the past 2 weeks, and more rain incoming. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says 34 million Californians are under a flood watch. Despite the devastating impacts, few media outlets have drawn a connection between the historic weather and human-induced climate change. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Truth Out wrote in this regard, a new report reveals the devastating cost of extreme weather events in the United States last year, with 18 events resulting in costs over $1 billion each and hundreds of lives lost. In total, 474 people in the U.S. died in 2022 due to those 18 weather events, according to a report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. Last year placed third for the highest number of disasters recorded in a calendar year, NOAA said on its website. The 2 years that saw a higher number of billion-dollar weather events were both recent. In 2021, there were 20 such events, and in 2020, there were 22. Though previous years have had a greater number of billion-dollar extreme weather events, 2022 was more costly. Damages from these disasters totaled approximately $165 billion for all 18 events, NOAA said, noting that in the year prior, the total cost was $155.3 billion. The severe weather events included hurricanes, flooding, winter storms, tornadoes, droughts, and more. Hurricane Ian was the most expensive of the 18 events in NOAA's report, costing $112.9 billion, the third most expensive hurricane since the agency started recording costs in 1980. Over the past 7 years, NOAA noted there have been over 122 separate billion-dollar weather-related disasters, with financial costs exceeding $1 trillion total. At least 5,000 people died as a result of these disasters. Although the report doesn't mention climate change, scientists from NOAA have said that the climate crisis is responsible for the increase in extreme weather events in the U.S. and around the world. The frequency and severity of extreme climate events continue to increase, NOAA Administrator Rick Spinard said on Twitter, adding, "Today's stats underscore why we must build our resiliency to these costly events and become a climate-ready nation." In an email to Truth Out, NOAA applied climatologist Adam Smith confirmed that the rise in extreme weather events is the result of climate crisis. Climate change is supercharging the increasing frequency and intensity of certain types of extreme weather that lead to billion-dollar disasters, most notably the rise in vulnerability to drought, lengthening wildfire seasons in western United States, and the potential for extremely heavy rainfall becoming more common in the eastern states. Smith said, "Given all these compounding hazard risks, there is an increased need to focus on where we build, how we build, and investing in infrastructure updates that are designed for 21st century climates." Other organizations and experts noted that becoming climate ready isn't enough. To lessen the frequency and severity of these events, the U.S. and other wealthy nations must act to reduce emissions. To curtail the worst climate and extreme weather disasters, major emitting nations must take drastic actions to rein in global warming emissions, a statement from the Union of Concerned Statistics said. Policymakers must also invest equitably in climate adaptation measures. Rachel Klotos, the policy director for Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists, told NPR, "This sobering data paints a dire picture of how woefully unprepared the United States is to cope with the mounting climate crisis and its intersection with other socioeconomic challenges in people's daily lives. Rather than responding in a one-off manner to disasters within the U.S., Congress should implement a comprehensive national climate resilience strategy commensurate the harm and risks we are already facing in the U.S. According to recent reports, in California, at least 19 people have died as the storms continue to batter the region, leading to widespread flooding, mudslides, and power outages. Thousands of residents have been ordered to evacuate in some areas, including parts of Santa Barbara and Monterey County. 5 million people in California remain under a flood watch. The National Weather Service says large portions of Central California have received over half their annual normal precipitation in just the past 2 weeks, and more rain is coming. Santa Cruz County Supervisor Zach Friend has described the storms as a, quote, once in a generational challenging event. In San Miguel, California, the National Guard has joined in the effort to find a 5-year boy named Kyle Doan, who was swept away by the flood waters recently. Meteorologists say California is being hit with what's known as an atmospheric river of rain, which has unleashed unrelenting storms. Meanwhile, Media Matters reports national TV news in largely ignoring the link between climate change and the deluge devastating California. The group looked at 60 segments that aired on national TV news networks between December 31st and January 4th. Only one mentioned climate change. To talk more about the storms in California, Daniel Swain, climate scientist at UCLA, said that the Media Matters reports national TV news is largely ignoring the link between climate change and the deluge devastating the U.S. state of California.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله
Democracy of Religion from Imam Khomeini's point of view. This is the words of Imam Khomeini. The rule of Islam is the rule of law. In this form of government, sovereignty is solely of Allah and Allah's law, commandment and decree. The law of Islam or the commandment of Allah has full authority over all individuals and over the Islamic government. All individuals from the Honorable Prophet of Islam, over all individuals and over the Islamic government, all individuals from the Honorable Prophet of Islam, Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace be upon him and his family, to successors of His Holiness, and the rest of the individuals, are subservient to the law until eternity, the same law that has descended on behalf of the Almighty and exalted Allah, and has been expressed in the language of the Quran and the Prophet of Islam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Spring of Truth. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, One of the point of views of Imam al-Khomeini radhiyallahu alayhi is that he said, "We have reached the station at which our nation exploded all at once and set off a revolution. Such an explosion has been matchless. A nation that had lost everything in the former regime, including his human dignity, and had to depend on others for everything. Then, suddenly, that violent outburst and the revolution was on, and it was by the blessings of this morning sessions that brought together all the people and focusing on one issue." Now, Imam al-Khomeini radhiyallahu alayhi, obviously, first he's trying to say that the revolution that happened in Iran is matchless. We have not seen any revolution through the course of history that could match the revolution of Iran. It was an outburst. It was the entire nation in uproar trying to change, even though under the previous regime, they have lost everything, even their own dignity. But that all had to change. And the Imam says, this all was possible. It all happened because of the blessings of the morning and processions and the majalis of Imam al-Hussein.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
Sallallahu alayhi.
People who were attending these majalis, the people who were attending these processions, they had one aim in mind, and that is to revolt against oppression, to revolt against oppressors, to make a change, to seek justice, to seek equality, and to seek everything that you have been denied. In the same way Imam al-Hussein did, we will do the exact same thing. And that made people explode, not just revolt. They exploded. And such explosion never seen in history. Why? Because it is an outcry from the depth of the heart of people that enough is enough. We should not succumb to humility. We should not be taken for a drive. We should not see our resources go to our enemy while we suffer. Poverty and lack of education, it was ravaging throughout the country. And people were poor, poor. And they sit under the richest country on the planet. But the resources were going somewhere else. So people revolted. And the ignition to all this revolution, to this outburst and to this explosion was in fact the majalis of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam that taught them to stand up for their right.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.